Welcome to the Global from Asia podcast, where the daunting process of running an international business from Hong Kong is broken down into straight up actionable advice. And now, your host, Michael Michelini.
Happy Chinese New Year, everybody. I am doing our intro. It's just the day after lunar calendar is switched to February 8th. So I hope everybody's having a great year. We're 10% done with this year in the solar calendar, but just beginning in the lunar. I may have to do these podcast intros at the Hong Kong office. I have nowhere left to record at home. Got baby Maggie here next to me, grandpa in the other room, Miles in the other room, kitchen and TV and the others. So it's a bit difficult to get some quiet time. I hope everybody is going to enjoy today's show. We have Mike Bellamy back. He is top guest from the previous shows, and he's going to talk about transfer pricing. He's from Passage Maker Solutions. We did the show right in his office in Lohu in Shenzhen, and we also have a little bit of a bonus after the interview with Dr. Neil O'Connor, his partner in the China Sourcing Academy. He gives some tips on banking in Hong Kong and international taxes. We have to get him on his show of his own too. Also, really good news is Mike is going to be a speaker at the Cross Border Summit on April 16th, our big conference coming up. So be sure to check out his speaker profile and more at Cross Border Summit. And without further ado, let's go into the show. Okay, thank you everybody for tuning in. Again, we have with us always fun guest, Mike Bellamy from Passage Maker Solutions. So thanks for being here, Mike.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So yeah, we're in 2016 now, and I was looking through the stats of 2015 and Mike's episode number 71 about the best practices to avoid factory scams was like really one of the top shows. So I'm sure this is going to be another popular one. So maybe for those that missed you on the last show, maybe give a quick intro.
Sure. A bit of my background, as you can tell from the accent, I'm from the U.S. I came over to Asia 20 years ago as an exchange student, and a wife, two children, and 200 employees later, I'm still here. So yeah, just a bit of background. The company I run, Passage Maker Sourcing Solutions, is in the business process outsourcing business. Now that's a mouthful, but basically at the end of the day, what we're doing is helping those customers that are probably large enough to set up their own factories or at least their own sourcing team on the ground in China, but they don't want the headache of setting up a WFE, managing a factory, dealing with local governments and employing people directly. So we leverage our existing infrastructure in China, both our own WFE and my own front offices with import-export licenses and, existing staff and licensed customs brokers and HR managers and CFOs, all of that stuff, so that the customer can leverage our infrastructure. So basically outsource the team in China, whether it's manufacturing on an assembly line or in a front office to us. So last year, I'm proud to say that the teams that we set up were responsible for just over $200 million worth of bill of material. I wish that was my margin, but that's just the bill of material we're coordinating. And but most of our projects, most of our customers, they're sourcing a couple $1 million in China. But we do have projects that are small enough where there's just one support staff that we hire, and we build a team around that. So we can help customers of all different sizes.
So yeah, it's great. And then today is going to be I have a feeling some people might not even heard of me doing business with China. It's called transfer pricing. We haven't talked about it much on the podcast here either. So maybe first, a beginner's definition of transfer pricing?
Well, first off, I want to make it really clear. I'm not an accountant. I have a business degree, but that doesn't make me a certified advisor for legal issues or accounting issues. So today I'm just sharing what I've learned setting up my own companies in China, as well as servicing the supply chains of my customers. So having said that, getting that disclaimer out of the way, here's the basic points of transfer pricing. Put simply, let's say that you buy a widget in China for $1 and you sell it in your home country for $10. Your profit, at the end of the day is roughly $9. And on that $9, you'll be taxed. Now, let's say that you set up a Hong Kong company and that Hong Kong company buys the same widget for $1 from the same factory and then sells it to your headquarters, and then you sell it on to the customer. The key is you buy it from China at $1, but your Hong Kong company sells it to yourself for $9. Then it's sold to the end user in America or wherever for $10. So the North American profit, if you will, that's being taxed is the $1. And you're keeping the difference in Hong Kong. So in this case, the $8 of the markup stays in that Hong Kong entity, and only the $1 is on the books in the U.S. headquarters. Now, the magic happens when you realize that if you set up a Hong Kong company in the right way, profits are not taxed in Hong Kong. So the whole benefit of transfer pricing and the reason to do this offshoring is to reduce your global tax exposure in a legal way. Of course, when you repatriate the funds out of Hong Kong or any offshore jurisdiction into your home market, whether it's simple transferring funds or paying dividends or whatever, you're going to get hit with tax. But until that time, imagine this pile of money building up in Hong Kong tax-free that you can use to pay for the next round of orders. And so this money tax-free kind of recycles and the pile gets bigger and bigger. And then one day you say, all right, I need to repatriate it back to the U.S. And then you pay taxes. But some countries might not be as strict as the U.S. and you might not end up paying those hefty taxes. So that's an oversimplification, but you get the point.
Yeah, it's great. And I mean, actually, like as small business owners, I'll call myself a small business owner. You know, a lot of people are nervous about being smart with taxes. But if you look at Apple and Google, a lot of these huge, massive internet companies or global empires are doing similar things. Again, like Mike and I say, well, we're not tax professionals, but this is definitely something you should dig into. Yeah, I think a lot of listeners are buying from China and they have Hong Kong companies selling to the US. So you mentioned a case there. I don't know if there's something more there?
Sure. I think you're raising the question of going global, where you're doing business in multiple jurisdictions. And I think it's important to remember that the Hong Kong tax code is very, very business friendly, but things get a lot more complex in your home country depending on how your home country's tax authorities view your involvement with the Hong Kong company. Now, if that Hong Kong company is owned by you or is it controlled by you, then there's issues of arm's length, and different countries' tax man will look at this arm's length issue differently when reviewing transfer pricing. Also, what a lot of people don't realize is that, let's say that you have your own factory. I'm not talking about buying from a factory, but you set up a factory in China. So you've got what's called a WFOE, a wholly foreign-owned enterprise. A lot of business people forget that now it's not just an issue of transfer pricing or arm's length issues with Hong Kong in your home country, but also you've got the PRC government looking out. Because what would happen in the old days is you would have these factories get set up and run at a loss every year for 10, 20 years in a row, and just moving the profits over to Hong Kong. So the Chinese government is wise about that. And, it's a big red flag if you're selling at a loss. There's some flexibility for the first couple of years when you set up a factory, your own factory. But at some point, you do need to make a profit and you can't under-declare in the PRC. So those days are gone.
The internet's amazing and e-commerce is getting more and more amazing. But of course, governments and everybody else is catching up as fast, or maybe not as fast, but they're trying to catch up to all these tactics. So a lot of people are listening, they're wondering, how do they value the product at these different distribution levels? And it's also a massive disruption with Amazon and other e-commerce players, but I think the traditional one is manufacturer to importer, wholesaler, retailer. Is there some kind of numbers of margins that they should put there?
Well, if you're just buying from a contract manufacturer or a seller in China, then these points aren't applicable. That's a traditional buy-sell, and you've got your profits back home. It's as soon as you either set up your own factory in China that you own or partially own, like a joint venture or a WFOE, and or as soon as you set up that Hong Kong holding company, then things get really complex. So, within that question that you asked, there are a couple sub-questions that are really important, and I'm assuming we're talking about arm's length and transfer pricing. So, for example, some of the notes that I prepared that I wanted to share, now I'll bring out my slides if you don't mind. I think what you're asking is, what's a reasonable markup at different levels of the supply chain when those levels of the supply chain are controlled by you, meaning maybe you have your own factory, or at least you have your own holding company in Hong Kong, and now you're bringing it into the US or Canada or Australia or Europe, wherever, you know, what prices should you set along the distribution so that you don't raise any red flags? And, you know, it's kind of tricky because you can't just go online to a website in the US, let alone China, and find out what is a reasonable markup to export given widget out of China. So what happens is basically, you know, there's some rules of thumb. Hey, if you're making a reasonable profit and you're paying taxes in the PRC and your markup is roughly on par with what your competitors, meaning other Chinese manufacturers, are paying, you're going to be okay. And if the Chinese tax man does knock on your door sometime, then, you know, you need to show that you're not under declaring. You know, prices go up and down over time, raw materials, labor rates. But if you're at a loss and declaring a loss for many years in a row, yet you're still in business and driving a nice car and have employees working, something's fishy. So, you know, you can pay tax advisors back home or in Hong Kong or even in China to do benchmark studies. If, you know, but that's when the volume gets large. If you're dealing in millions of dollars, then you need an accurate benchmark because every percentage is going to have an impact. And if you're, for example, under declaring by 2% on a couple million dollars, then the tax man is going to raise a red flag. If your orders are, you know, under a couple $100,000 a year from your woofy in China, you know, even if you're off by a couple percentage points, it's not a big deal. Okay. Now, in the worst case, let's flip over to the issue of, you know, transfer pricing. How does your government back home view your ownership of a Hong Kong issue, of a Hong Kong entity? Because I think most of your readers aren't setting up factories in China, yeah, but they are interested in setting up Hong Kong holding companies. So the real issue is, how seriously does your home country's government take this issue of arm's length, you know, control of the Hong Kong entity? Because in some strict jurisdictions back home, the simple fact that you have some ownership, maybe more than 10%, or it's your name on the bank account, they don't care if you own the company outright, but because you control the bank account, now they view that Hong Kong company as a wholly owned subsidiary or something that's under your control, and your jurisdiction back home might tax you on it. Some countries are very liberal. If you don't own the Hong Kong company 100%, then you don't need to pay taxes on the profit there. So at the end of the day, you know, this really isn't a China issue. It's something you need to talk to your advisors back home. Another, if I might kind of throw in a common mistake that your listeners might make if they're lucky enough to set up a Hong Kong company and start buying from China and selling to the world. One common mistake that small or medium-sized businesses make, you know, they get through all the hurdles of setting up a Hong Kong company, they're making money, they're buying from China, selling overseas, they're enjoying that offshore status, so no business taxes in Hong Kong. But if you're not careful and you do some things like start employing people in Hong Kong, signing contracts in Hong Kong, having Hong Kong-based customers pay to your Hong Kong-based bank accounts, then the Hong Kong government might say, hey, actually, you're conducting business onshore, not offshore, and then taxes apply. So some small businesses, you know, build their pricing model under the assumption that they're not going to pay any profits tax in Hong Kong, which is fine and is possible. But if you're assuming that you're not paying taxes, then you make a mistake. And at the end of the year, you've got to pay 15% on everything that moved through your bank accounts in Hong Kong. You know, that can get scary. So I caution your listeners to if they do set up an office in Hong Kong, make sure that they maintain that offshore status in a legal way.
Sure. So we've already been, you know, a lot of this has been somewhat covered, but in a certain point is, we're talking about the PRC, we're talking about Hong Kong, and then of course there's the home country. Is there common definitions, or is there common rules or policies, or is there, I guess, I know you're, you know, this is always sticky stuff, but is there something they could at least maybe use for Google searches or keywords for their accountants in certain countries?
Yeah, you know, that's a tough one. Obviously, there's, you know, global tax issues and transfer pricing. I think you could do some Google search and you'll find information. But I prepared three questions that your listeners should be asking their tax advisors. And so here they are. You know, every government out there wants to get their hands on the tax dollar. So I'm not proposing that we break laws. You know, these are questions that you can ask your tax advisors so that you can structure things efficiently so that you do lower your global tax exposure without breaking any laws. So the first question is, you know, ask your tax guy back home, how does the government back home define control and arm's length issues regarding overseas companies that you may own or be associated with? That's the key. You know, it's not just do you own it, but do you have some type of control or contractual arrangement? So ask the first question to ask is, how does my government back home define issues of control and arm's length if I was to own or be associated with a Hong Kong company? The next one is, if I set up a Hong Kong company, how can I use it in a fully legal way to reduce my taxes back home? So that's a question, once again, you need to ask your advisors in your home country, because, you know, Lithuania and Mexico are going to have radically different tax codes from Jamaica and Japan. So it's not a question we can answer here from Hong Kong and China. And also, it's kind of a mistake for that Jamaican company, if you will, to get tax advice from a Hong Kong advisor that doesn't really understand Jamaican tax law. That can be dangerous, because that advisor might be giving suggestions based on their customers that are in the U.S. And, you know, I don't know what Jamaican tax code is for these things. All right. And then the third question to ask is, do I even need a company back home? You know, that's a key question. Can you get it all done by simply closing your shop back home and moving it to Hong Kong? And if you did move your business to Hong Kong, how would that impact your personal taxes? You know, that's another question to ask your tax advisor back home. If I have this pile of money sitting in Hong Kong, how do I use it without breaking any rules? You know, you can't just fill a suitcase up with $100,000 and fly home, you know, but should you transfer it back home as a, you know, some kind of rebate, or as a consulting fee, or as a royalty payment, or as a commission? You know, there are different countries view, you know, dividends in different ways. So the third question to ask your tax guy back home is, you know, if there's this pot of gold over in Hong Kong, how do I use it?
Really, really great stuff. I'm sure people are scrambling to write this down and take notes. So I'm going to flip some questions around, but what stage should somebody start thinking about this? Is this something they should do from day one? This is something that, say they're an Amazon seller. Is there any way that they could get started? You know, actually, some people ought to ask me. It's like, Mike, should I open up a Hong Kong company today? I don't even have any sales, or I don't know if you have any advice for that.
Yeah, you know, before you start getting nervous and saying, hey, I should set up a Hong Kong company, how much does a Hong Kong company cost? The first thing you want to do is, you know, go online and find out what is the corporate tax rate in your home country versus Hong Kong. And then multiply that by your expected profit. And if the difference is a couple thousand dollars, then you're going to lose money, because it's going to cost more than that to set up the system and to hire the advisors and to get the office going. Virtual offices are cheap in Hong Kong, but you still have to file. You still have to pay for, you know, corporate accounts need to be done and bookkeeping. So look at your tax rates in Hong Kong versus back home, multiply it by your profit, expected profit, and it turns out that the difference is hundreds of thousands of dollars, then you need to start thinking about these things seriously.
Great. So we're both Americans, and, you know, you've been here, like you said, 20 years, and have a Hong Kong holding company in China. Is there a tips for people? It's kind of similar, but is there?
Yeah, sure. You know, I think that, you know, don't stress out about this until the time's right. Yeah. And then when you do set up that Hong Kong company, it's imperative that you do it in the right way. And, you know, it's broken my heart to see some friends set up their Hong Kong company, and then they signed a contract at a trade show in Hong Kong, and they you know, weren't thinking about how to protect their offshore, you know, this advantage of being considered offshore business. So be real careful about that. Hong Kong government's great, because they clarify everything's in English and in Chinese, really clear what the steps are. So there's really no excuse as a business person to not know what you're getting into.
Okay, great. I mean, even preparing for this, I'm ready, and I'm always learning, and I'm sure listeners have their heads spinning. I know this is going to be a popular show, but what is something maybe they can apply today, or what can they do to get started?
Yeah, you know, sounding like a bit of a salesman. Sorry. I've been giving a lot of free information so far. Let me kind of make a plug. You know, for those business people that are thinking about it, but maybe they've done the math and, you know, there's not massive savings, but they want to kind of learn a little bit more about it. You know, they can work with a company like PassageMaker, my company, where we already have the Woofies in China, we already have the Hong Kong holding companies, we have customers around the world, and they can leverage our infrastructure to see, you know, how could this work? And if their business grows to a certain point, you know, a couple of $1 million a year, then they might consider, you know, setting up their own operations in Hong Kong and China. And one of the unique aspects of my company is, unlike a trading company that tries to lock the customer in for life, we're very realistic and open and transparent with our customers, where we'll say, all right, if your goal is at some point in the future to have your own operation in Asia, okay, let's keep that in mind. And then when that magic day comes, you know, we hand over the keys basically so that the customer doesn't have to start from scratch again. You know, we work with companies like yours to get things set up in Hong Kong. So yeah, working with a company that already has infrastructure in China, like PassageMaker, could give some insight to those small to medium companies that are out there listening to this podcast that aren't sure what they should do next.
Great, great. Yeah, definitely keep plugging. Is there more plugs that you can give us? I'm sure they're maybe begging to go to your websites or find you online.
Yeah. So, of course, you know, people can find me by plugging in my name, Mike Bellamy, Bellamy, on the Google search or YouTube, also on LinkedIn. But I'm associated with the China Sourcing Academy. And so a lot of this material that we talked about is in the form of a video course. And so if people really want to, you know, want to spend a couple hours talking about how to find and manage suppliers, we've got that material out there. So, you know, I would love to be of service, and please give my email and contact information on the podcast. And I'm happy to help get other foreigners pointed in the right direction, because Lord knows I made a lot of mistakes early on in my career. And I don't want to sit here saying that I know everything. I've just made a lot of mistakes, and happy to share it with your audience.
Great. Thanks, Mike. And yeah, we'll link it all up on the show notes to all your many businesses and websites. So thank you.
All right, cool.
Okay. And we're also fortunate to have with us in the studio while we were doing this, Dr. Neil O'Connor. He's a tax professor in Hong Kong, and we've met before, and he's a listener of the show too. So do you have some things you want to add to what you heard?
Oh, thank you, Mike. Thank you for giving us this chance to say a few things. And first time I've been on your podcast, I've listened to it a lot, and I learned some things as much as trying to give some advice just by listening to your podcast. So very, very interesting. I have had recent experience actually setting up a company in Hong Kong, and I went to several banks, I went to Citibank, and they said, well, you need to have a physical address in Hong Kong. If you just have a virtual office, we won't open an account for you, for your company. So I went to HSBC, and they said, okay, they'll allow a virtual office or a physical address. So I think your listeners need to realize that I think the banks are getting much more tougher in terms of whether you have a virtual office or not. Mm-hmm. And so not all banks are the same. And I guess the other challenge especially for those readers who are US citizens, they have even less alternatives available in terms of banks, because some banks will refuse to actually open up an account. Now, I think you've discussed that on another podcast. So these are some things that the listeners may need to take into account. And up until about 12 months ago, Hong Kong was removed as a blacklisted tax haven from the EU. And the reason why it got removed was that the banks and the government agreed through the OECD to share information on anyone that has a bank account, any foreigner that has a bank account in Hong Kong. And now the government, the tax office in Hong Kong, if they're requested by a tax office in another country from the OECD, they can lift the corporate veil. So even if you have an offshore company out of Hong Kong, so a VBI, they can still open that up to find out who the real owner is, because they didn't have the power to do that 18 months ago. So this is another thing that actually there's the advantage to have an offshore company in Hong Kong versus a Hong Kong company. There's not a greater advantage as there were 18 months ago. So one strategy was to have an offshore company to protect your assets from people knowing who the actual owner is, and that's very hard to do now.
No, you mean having a VBI company own your Hong Kong company?
Well, no, VBI, even okay, VBI company. So one strategy is have like British Virgin Islands or Cayman Islands or Bermuda. Okay. So the point was that the strategy in the past was to have that so you can actually separate your name from assets at that company. You still have control, but people don't know who the actual ultimate owner is. That up until 18 months ago, the bank...
They don't give that up. I thought they didn't give that up.
Now they have the power.
They have the ability, but whether they... It's not just out there in the open. Someone has to request it.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, for example, a tax office from France can contact tax office in Hong Kong to find out, say, a French person that's got a VBI company out of Hong Kong or even Hong Kong company, and so that the tax office can request the bank, if the bank account is in Hong Kong, for the VBI company to find out who the actual owner is.
Neil, could you clarify if the older companies are grandfathered in? For example, if a company was set up 3 years ago, and now if the veil is lifted as of 18 months ago, is the veil lifted on older companies or just the ones that were set up in the last 18 months? You know, I think this ties into our interview, Mike. You know, my point was you're going to end up paying tax. Don't try to hide things. But for those readers out there that maybe have been playing readers or listeners that have been doing things by the old school way, you know, maybe hiding information, this is really important stuff that we're getting from Neil.
That's a great question, Mike. Yeah, if you've had a company that's set up many years ago, yes, the veil still can be lifted on that company as same way for new companies. So there's no, you don't have any advantage, no advantage at all.
Yeah, basically, I think that's happening around the world is these governments are cracking down. And so if you're trying to do something that, if you're trying to hide, I don't think people are going to be able to hide now or much more in the future anywhere. Really.
Yeah. We can talk about this in another podcast if you like, but there's current discussion. The big issue on the table of most tax authorities around the world is BEPS. And that's base erosion profit shifting. So, of course, that's made famous by Apple and Starbucks and Amazon and Google and all them. And even Netflix had a case in Australia. So this is very big for multinationals, but it all trickles down to the average person and their company in the end, because this drives tax authorities around the world to coordinate. And it was always, you know, up until 3 or 4 years ago, it was very easy to take advantage of the lack of coordination among the tax authorities around the world. But increasingly, they're more coordinated. They're sharing more and more information. There's very little you can hide in the way you could have 3 or 4 years ago. So this is something that you just need to take into account. So, yes.
Thanks. Yeah, we'll have a full show for you if very shortly. So thanks again, Neil, for sharing.
My pleasure. Thank you, Mike.
Okay. Thanks, Mike, and also Neil for coming on and sharing. I know transfer pricing is a pretty complex thing, and Mike did his best to give everybody their ideas. But of course, he says in the show, and I have to reiterate, is of course, talk to your own accountant in your local country. And international taxes, international business is a pretty complex thing and is still really developing fast. So of course, we try our best here to cover everything and give you the best information possible. But of course, you know, we have to disclose, you know, confirm with your own tax professional. We had some fun after the recording and we took a bike ride. It was actually also used for my video blog. So if you want to check that out, I'll link that in the show notes. Also, we have the Cross Border Summit right during the Global Sources Fair and Canton Fair. So I know a lot of you guys are over here in this part of the world anyway. I hope we can make some time to come on Saturday in Shenzhen, April 16th. The address, ticket info, and everything is on crossbordersummit.com, which redirects to a Global From Asia landing page. That's all I have for today. I am going to go back to my holiday, Chinese New Year. and try to get some family time. I hope you guys also, in addition to all your crazy business ventures, also spend time with family. I don't know if you can hear Maggie in the background, but keeping it real. Take care and best of luck with your global business. Bye-bye.
To get more info about running an international business via Hong Kong, please visit our website at www.globalfromasia.com. That's www.globalfromasia.com. Also, be sure to subscribe to our iTunes feed. Thanks for tuning in.